This is Romance Watson welcoming you to another session of Software Modernization with Mark Schroeder. Today we are speaking with Stephen Salaka on the subject of cloud computing. For over 15 plus years, Stephen Salaka is considered an expert in which he carries varied industry experience in both software development and systems engineering, as well as overall project management and client development consulting. He has significant experience in Linux and Windows mixed environments and programming experience, and a solid understanding of complete systems lifecycle development, deployment, and support. So now let's take this opportunity to learn more about cloud computing. Here is your host, Mark Schroeder, as he interviews Stephen Salaka.
Today we're going to be talking a bit more about cloud and virtualization and about what's going on in the future of IT. What's your background in that whole area?
My background is I've been in the IT industry for about 15 years now. Started off way back when with a small little private company that I ran, basically just doing computer assistance for people, but it eventually grew from there where I was providing assistances to schools and local businesses. From there, I worked at Radio Shack and Walmart in their IT departments. And then eventually I said, all right, let's see what else I can do. Started studying for my doctorate, my PhD in organizational psychology. I said, well, let me come to Japan. So I started working with a company here called Nova. They basically had a very large infrastructure, VoIP communication for teaching English to Japanese people through the television. So voice over IP, but using a special set-top box for that. Unfortunately, that company went bankrupt, and I found myself with Ashley Associates. Ashley Associates basically does a little bit of everything, a lot on the infrastructure side, a lot on the programming side. The main thing that we bill ourselves as is an application service provider, providing a one-stop shop for organizations. So most of our clients are big, large Fortune 500 companies that basically just want to deal with one vendor that does everything for them. And so that's what we provide. We provide everything from the creative direction to the backend and infrastructure. In terms of what I've been doing, I've done a mix of everything from infrastructure, hardware setup, to programming and enterprise system development.
You know, we're talking about cloud and virtualization. What is the reason that we're even looking at that kind of infrastructure these days?
It's really interesting. If you go back 25, 30 years when computing first started, everything was all about the thin client, and everything was being done on mainframes. You had your big processing centers, you had your big technical centers, and then you had your workers who would be working on these workstations, but they'd be nothing more than thin clients. Then 15, 20 years ago, all of a sudden, the personal computer came out. So instead of having to have huge office space dedicated for these number crunching machines, you could have the machine right at your desk. And so we went from a server doing all the processing to basically individual computers doing all the processing. Well, now, as we're moving forward, we're actually finding that we're going back to our roots. The desktops are now becoming more and more thin clients, and we're putting more and more of our processing off onto these application servers. So you could say that it all started when we started switching from individual PCs to the server client model, where you might have an application that has a backend that's running on a remote server, or you might have your database, which are all stored on remote servers. So all of a sudden we switched from having everything on your individualized computer back to starting to put things onto servers. So we started transitioning everything onto these servers. Well, now the issue with the cloud is large companies such as Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and a lot of other providers are basically doing about the same thing that happened with your electricity back in the early 1900s. In the early 1900s, back before electricity was prevalent, companies who had a very big strategic advantage had their own power generation plant. So, you know, big rooms, they'd be able to run electricity. But then all of a sudden, you had these startups coming around, you had Edison coming around, and they started centralizing the power generation. So instead of having electricity being a strategic advantage, electricity then became a commodity. People were able to buy it, people were able to sell it, and because of the economies of scale, people could get a lot of electricity for very cheap by going through the utility companies. And we're seeing the same shift happening now with migrating to these virtual or cloud platforms, where we're not dedicating a single piece of hardware or a single set of hardware for a specific application, we're using that as a utility. And so instead of these IT systems being considered strategic, they're now becoming commodities that are costs of doing businesses.
So it is interesting how the world keeps going in circles like that, where you start out, you know, we started with the mainframes, and now we're sort of going back to somewhat similar model there.
Correct. I mean, there are a lot of differences, but the biggest similarity is going from having your processing remotely, having it locally, and now having the processing remotely again.
What is the difference between virtualization and cloud?
The biggest difference between virtualization and cloud is essentially virtualization is a more localized effect, where you might have one centralized piece of hardware in your office that runs maybe four or five virtualized computers on top of that. The cloud, on the other hand, is where you have, it's the same thing. You're still doing a virtual server, but instead of it being on a single piece of hardware or a local piece of hardware, we're now considering it being hosted elsewhere. So the biggest difference that you could say between virtualization and cloud is cost of ownership of hardware. Where virtualization, you would have to own your boxes, you would have to set up your servers, but they'd be virtualized within the same pieces of hardware. Whereas when we consider the cloud is usually something we consider as a service that's provided by other organizations or other companies.
What would be the benefit of someone virtualizing within their own environment instead of going to the cloud?
Well, one of the benefits is when you own your own hardware, you have access to your own hardware, especially when you're dealing with mission-critical systems, you definitely would want to make sure you had complete access over everything, access to your data center, access to your hardware. When you pass it off to the cloud, there is a risk of the cloud crashing. There is a risk of your internet access to the cloud becoming corrupted. So there are some risks that exist when you go to the cloud that you don't have in your virtualized system. Your virtualized system, you're still owning your hardware, you're still owning your data center, and you still have your own dedicated connections. The difference is, in the cloud, you can get it for a lot cheaper.
So one of the primary benefits of the cloud is the cost.
Correct.
What are some of the other problems you see with virtualization locally?
One of the biggest problems with local virtualization, especially with a lot of these companies that are trying to migrate to virtual servers, is your virtualized platforms. Right now, the two main ones out there would be Xen or they would be VMware. The problem with using those is that not all operating systems and not all programs can run within a virtualized environment. Some of the legacy systems, especially a lot of offices, are running old Windows 2000 boxes. They're running old, let's say, Red Hat 3.5 systems that have these legacy systems that need to be upgraded before they can be virtualized. Most of your virtualization needs to be a relatively recent piece of software. Additionally, when you're dealing with virtualization, things like hardware acceleration, graphics card acceleration don't necessarily exist on the virtualized machine. So if these are things that are going to be needed, you're either going to have to provide your own virtualized platform to develop on, or you're going to need to not go to virtualize and continue with your dedicated hardware. A good example of this is in the pharmaceutical industry and in the science industry, a lot of the computing, the distributed computing, is being done by graphics processors. The NVIDIA CUDA platform is one of these platforms that allows the graphics to basically do the processing. The difficulty with this is that can't be virtualized off into, let's say, a server farm. You would need to have a specific set of hardware out there. So again, the main limitation we would say is the hardware itself that we're virtualizing on top of.
What about performance on a virtual machine? Does having your machine in a virtual environment, does that actually reduce the performance of your machine, or does it perform pretty equally to a non-virtualized machine?
That really comes down to what you're trying to do. For example, if you're using a thin client, which is connected to a virtual server on the back end, the difference between having a desktop and having the thin client is the fact that you've got to send packets to the server, and then you've got to wait for those packets to come back and be received. So in that case, if you're dealing with things that are real-time sensitive, where you need to see a real-time display, having that latency between the server and the thin client might cause some issues. However, if you're just hosting, let's say, a web server, or you're hosting something that already has connection latency built into it, then virtualization definitely is going to be a benefit. So, for example, if you're already hosting your SQL servers on dedicated servers, but you're finding that each of these servers, maybe one's using 25% of capacity, another one's using 25% capacity, by making those virtualized, now all of a sudden you're getting better utilization of your hardware for the same performance level.
That's good. Then you can use your full hardware instead of just using that 25% of it.
Correct. Well, one of the biggest benefits of going with virtualization is a lot of companies have hundreds and hundreds of servers that are sitting there that are very, very underused. So they'll have a server, it's taking up rack space, it's taking up power, but maybe it's using 1% of its processing capacity. That 99% of other capacity is wasted. It's wasted electricity, it's wasted space, it's all wasted. But when we go to something that's virtualized, because the processing is shared across multiple environments, if one of those machines is only using 1%, there's a good chance another virtualized machine is sitting on there that's using the other 99%. So we get complete usage of our hardware versus having wasted processing cycles sitting out there.
Now let's sort of change direction and talk about cloud computing again. Everybody you talk to has their definition of cloud computing, so I'd like to hear what your definition of it is.
Cloud computing, I would say the easiest way to define cloud computing is basically computing as a service, where you're purchasing processing cycles from an external vendor or external party. It's where you take a bunch of servers, you create an infrastructure on top of that that allows you to run virtualized instances or virtualized applications on top of this bank of servers. You can have a private cloud, which is essentially setting up a bunch of private servers internally, but that's more along the lines of virtualization than cloud computing. Cloud computing is more along the lines of using just processing power as a service.
We already talked about how cloud computing actually helps with or is a more cost-effective way of getting services. What are some other benefits?
Well, one of the benefits is because most of these cloud computing centers are in large data centers, you usually have multiple redundant connections to the internet. And so if you're hosting a website, especially a website that doesn't have a lot of processor-intensive back-end hardware going on, it really makes a big benefit by moving that into the cloud. The reason being is when you're in the cloud, you're usually only paying for processing cycles you're using. So instead of having to have a dedicated piece of server hardware sitting there doing these websites for you, you can sit it off in the cloud. Because it's in the cloud, it's got these redundant connections going into it. And so you're probably going to see your throughput and your bandwidth going out increasing as a result of that. So you don't have to worry about your data center falling apart, your data center crashing. Because it's off in this additional cloud, it's safe, it's protected, and you don't have to worry about any of the security issues on the back end.
I was just going to point out one of the issues that I read about the cloud is the security issues. What can people do to feel more confident in the cloud and the security of the cloud?
One of the big things that people are afraid of going in the cloud is the fact that because it's shared processing, it's because it's a shared sort of system, there's a fear that data is going to leak across borders or boundaries and people are going to get leakage on their systems. Most of the cloud services, however, have a very strong encryption capacity where each individualized virtualized host, each individualized virtualized server is essentially isolated so that even if something else came into it, you would be able to read the data. It basically would be isolated. Now, a lot of companies have a lot of restricted material, a lot of regulatory material that cannot get out. In these cases, having the usage of the public cloud at this point probably wouldn't be recommended. It would probably be best if these were on their own private virtual clouds, just because at that point, because the data is so sensitive and because the cloud it's still in its infancy, there is a chance that security could be compromised at that point.
So there's some problems with security. Are there any other kind of problems that you see with the cloud that companies have to deal with when they move up there?
The biggest issue I see is mainly security of data. In terms of websites, in terms of media, in terms of publicly facing, definitely cloud's going to be a big benefit. A lot of these applications that people run, a lot of these applications that are done, excellent to be put in the cloud. But as soon as you start talking about private information, In Japanese, we say kojinjoho, your private information. That's really where the cloud needs to be a little bit more robust in terms of its security measures for this data.
And I'm sure that in the next few years, they're going to figure out the best way to solve that security issue.
Correct.
You mentioned a private cloud and that it's hosted internally. Is that the major difference between a private and a public cloud, or are there other differences?
That's really the main difference. Is the private cloud is your own clustered servers running your own virtualized instances across it, whereas a public cloud is you're getting it as a service from some other organization. Now, you could have a private cloud as a service from another organization. For example, you could get Amazon or you could get another one of these companies to basically set up a bank of dedicated hardware for you, but that dedicated hardware would all be cloud hardware.
So it's not your servers, it's actually servers that Amazon hosts, but that hardware then becomes your private place.
Correct. So the only thing that would ever touch that hardware would be your particular software, your particular application. So if you look at the different cloud computing models, some companies provide just the cloud in general, others provide shared cloud, and finally others provide a dedicated hosting environment where it's the cloud setup where you've got all the infrastructure, the network storage, the redundancies, the abilities for creating servers on the fly, but it's only on servers that are allocated specifically to you. So if you're able to get that type of service, then the issue of security becomes much, much less.
Right, it sounds like it, because you'd be the only ones touching that, so it would be much, much more secure, right? Okay.
I mean, companies have, for a long time, have been putting out their data and putting out their hosting externally for a long time. So the fact that companies put private data and put this privacy information out on additional hosting environments is not something new. The new bit about it is the fact that because we're sharing all of this processing time and because we're sharing all of this information, it becomes a little scary if we're dealing with hardware that's shared. If the hardware is segregated, then issues such as memory leakage and memory copying don't occur. But if you don't get that, there is a possibility of, let's say, you read a record in your SQL into memory, it goes on your virtual server to wherever it's going to be delivered. But at the same time, somebody's hacked into the system to basically read all of the memory from that particular server, and then all of a sudden it's reading this private data that's unencrypted in the SQL, in the memory, as it's doing the transfer from SQL to, let's say, your front-end client.
And that could be a scary thing to have happen for a company.
Definitely, especially now you hear about all these privacy leaks and this privacy information that's getting out there. Computers are getting lost, people are getting hacked. A lot of it comes down to just poor IT security policies, but a lot of it comes down to hackers are getting a lot more ingenious in terms of how they operate. Now, one of the benefits of this cloud at this point is because it's not that widespread and that wide used, it's not necessarily as big of a target as, let's say, individual workstations, your Windows operating systems, your Linux operating systems. So we do have some breathing room. It's almost analogous to the reason why there aren't many Macintosh viruses out there. If you look at the office computers, 99% of them, no matter where you go, are PC-based or they're Linux-based. And so your major important information is going to be based inside of these computers. So your virus writers, your worm writers are going to be targeting these machines because they know they're going to get something. You know, if you send out 1,000 worms, you're going to get one hit back. However, with Macintosh, because the computers are so far few between, there's not as much profit or there's not as much return on trying to create hacks for this. So it's the same thing with the cloud. Because it's so new and because not a lot of companies have been doing this, there is a sort of security by obscurity with this where it's not necessarily a target of these hackers yet.
You were just talking about return on investment for hackers on getting into the security issue. Now, what about when a company wants to go into virtualization? How can they determine a return on investment for that?
Essentially, what they need to do is they need to take a look at several factors. First, they need to take a look at their ongoing hardware hosting costs. For example, you've got network infrastructure, you've got the actual physical servers themselves, you've got the electricity, you've got the data center costs, you've got all of these intrinsic costs. Additionally, one of the big things is hardware depreciates. I think right now it's on a 5-year cycle, so every 5 years, companies really need to be looking at upgrading their hardware in order to keep that same sort of level of technical prowess. When we go to virtualization or when we go to a cloud, instead of having to replace all my servers. And instead of having to upgrade all of this through into a cycle, I just add another blade into the system and I've got myself an upgrade. So the biggest ROI is the fact that one computer will now be used multiple places and multiple times.
It seems like it's almost a no-brainer if you can do that, if you can really cut the cost of your hardware immensely.
Correct. Some of the organizations we were working with, there was one financial institution that had 250 servers sitting there in their data center. Most of them were hardly ever used. They had a few legacy applications that they were supporting. Some of them were some legacy archival databases that they were supporting. By moving it to a virtualized environment, we were able to get them down to 5 servers with network attached storage. So instead of having to pay for, 200 pieces of rack space plus electricity bill plus all the network infrastructure to that, we virtualized it for them down to 5 servers, and they're getting the same performance that they had before. Now, if they want to upgrade, now if they want to change something, they just switch a single server instead of having to replace 30 servers, 40 servers, 50 servers. So the return on investment in that basically pays for itself within the 1 or 2 year period.
That's a great cost cutting down from 250 servers to 5.
Right.
Now, aside from the cost, are there any other key decision points that someone would consider when they're going to either virtualization or the cloud?
The biggest key besides cost is compatibility. The hardware, the software, everything that you're using, you need to make sure that it's available to be done inside of the cloud. It'd be done inside of a virtualized environment. If it's not, for example, if you've got a legacy system running on, let's say, Windows NT, and it's been running for, 15, 20 years now, it's a huge system, lots of people are using it, the cost to upgrade that particular system, the cost to actually go in there, rewrite the code, do everything, make sure it was backwards compatible, way, way, way outweighs the cost of just putting it on a new machine. Obviously, you'd have to take that into consideration. So what a lot of companies are doing, especially now for this first round of virtualization, is they're virtualizing or putting stuff off into the cloud as much as possible, and then they're keeping, let's say, 5 or 10 legacy servers around just so they maintain the same level of capacity as they used to.
I guess another thing is if a company uses a mainframe or a IBM i or some kind of server like that, I don't see those in the cloud at all. So they would have to modernize their applications before they could move forward.
Correct. In those instances where you had legacy systems or systems that were not available in the cloud, definitely you would have to keep them in the existing systems.
It'd be interesting to see if some of those kind of app servers are going to be available in the cloud in the future.
I think a lot of the companies are trying to move towards that fairly quickly. I know IBM is working on a few projects where they're trying to get some of their mainframe systems into a cloud-type environment. So this way their clients can move off into the cloud. A big push for this is the fact that the data centers, a single data center, consumes more electricity than most major cities. And so as people become more and more reliant on these data centers and having these data centers, it becomes more and more imperative that we as society turn from, just raw processing power to things that are more efficient. And by going to the cloud and by going to virtualization, you get a much smaller carbon footprint from these data centers. Because now instead of having a lot of wasted cycles that the computer's just sitting there heating up the air, it's actually all being used efficiently. And so we can reduce the number of servers, we can reduce the number of racks, we can reduce the number of data centers, and we can eventually get to the point where these data centers aren't creating such a large carbon footprint as they currently are.
So a company can cut costs, have more efficient servers, and then also help and become a green computing company all at the same time.
Exactly. And a lot of these companies that have, 100, 200 employees that all are using the same applications are actually finding that switching to thin clients where they have 1 or 2 virtualized servers in the back end, they're actually saving money because all of the software is standardized. They don't have to pay for the electricity for running a single computer. On average, your personal computer workstation is going to be running anywhere from 300 to 600 watts. If you can bring that down to, let's say, 20 watts for a thin client with just a monitor and a keyboard, if you've got 100 workers, you're saving, I don't know how many kilowatts of power per day.
And then the other nice thing is you can use, like an Android or an iPhone or iPad and connect to the cloud and use all that processing power, which you don't have in your computer. Well, that's really great.
Correct. So another one of these benefits of moving to the cloud is once something's in the cloud, it's a lot more easy to make it more mobile than when it's not in the cloud. So Salesforce mobilization, your mobilization of your teams becomes a lot easier. Whereas before, they had to be in the workstation, they had to be at their desk. Now they're in the cloud, now they have a thin client, you can take that thin client anywhere. Make a thin client for the iPad, and all of a sudden you've got your workers on the road being able to work.
That's a nice proposition to do. And, you know, even more airplanes are getting Wi-Fi in them so that people can work through the cloud on the airplane now.
Right, right.
Well, those are all the basic questions I had about cloud and virtualization today. Do you have any last comments you'd like to give to the people before we wrap it up?
I think the biggest thing that people need to be concerned about with virtualization and the cloud, especially going forward, is you have to look back and take a bit of history. Take a look back at the early 1900s and look at how electricity was individualized. There was all these different currents, all these different formats, but then all of a sudden it became standardized. It became so standardized and so reliable that people today take it for granted. So people need to be careful on the one hand. They don't want to jump too quickly into this where all of a sudden they might be hurting themselves. But at the same time, they need to keep an open mind and say, all right, my IT department, my IT infrastructure, it's no longer a strategic advantage for me, but it's a commodity. It's a cost of doing business. It's not if I have IT, it's how I use it.
You said that your company provides a host of services. How can they reach you to discuss that with you?
You can reach us at our website at www.ashleyassociates.co.jp. We are a Japanese-based organization, so we deal only in the Japanese market. However, one of our specializations is bringing companies into the Japanese market. So, for example, if you have an international company that wants to get into the Japanese market, you're looking for web presence, you're looking for office infrastructure, you're looking for that setup, we're able to connect you with the right places and provide that service for you.
That sounds good, being able to have someone to help you with all that setup and management.
Right.
Yep. Okay. It can make it be a lot faster route into a market that way.
It definitely is. One of the difficulties in dealing with the Japanese market is unless you actually have a presence in the market, it's very difficult to succeed. The Japanese market right now is very face-to-face based. So unless you have people on the ground in Japan doing the face-to-face work, it's very hard to break into that. But by having a partner company that's able to do that for you, it makes it a lot easier going forward, setting up your business, setting up the buildings, getting all that space going forward for it.
Well, Stephen, thanks for your time. This has been very interesting, and I'm sure that our listeners will enjoy hearing your interview. So that's all we have for today.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking this time out of your early morning.
All right. You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us for another session of Cloud Interviews. Please be sure to check back often to find more interviews and additional resources. Our goal is to build a warehouse of information on cloud computing. For more information on cloud computing and how you can subscribe to our free services, please visit us at www.cloudinterviews.com.